You know, I heard about this story about this woman that was involved in a terrible traffic accident, near-death situation, and she landed in the hospital. She was in and out of comas for weeks and weeks and weeks. Her husband was right by her side, and in one of those moments where she swooned back to consciousness, she motioned for her husband, and she whispered in his ear, and she had said these words. She said, "Honey, when you've been with me through every bad time in my life, when I lost my job, you were there. When our house caught fire and burned to the ground, you were there. When I had my first heart attack, you were there. When we got hit by this truck, put me in the hospital, you were there. You're here now in this hospital with me. Sweetheart, I'm beginning to think you're bad luck." You know, might have some people in your relationships that you think that way, like, gosh, this person is poison to my life. They're like bad luck. Maybe you have that person that just, they cause and create drama, and it's just like everything's an emergency. Everything has to be right now. You ever met those folks? Like instantly, and you're like, no, but I'm that way. Then you're the problem, maybe in the relationship. But this, I mean, you would call that toxic for those people that are just constantly living with drama and just manipulative or abusive. The list, you can just keep on going with that list. And last week we talked about building the bridge of reconciliation in those ruined and rotten relationships. And this week we get to talk about, do we burn the bridge? Do we burn the relationship? Or do we set some boundaries? And so really today is about determining through God's discernment. Determining through God's discernment if she should burn the bridge or if we should set some boundaries in the relationship. And I look through the scriptures and I find like probably one of the most toxic relationships that you can find in the book of Judges. Turn with me to the book of Judges. There's a story about two people named Samson and a lady named Delilah. And Samson was a hand-selected man of God. And just so you're aware, God chooses bad leaders, by the way. Okay, so God says, you're my marked man, and it's their decision if they want to be good leaders or not. And in the book of Judges, these are not men and women that hold the gavel. These are men and women that are leaders of Israel. And so just so you know, all you women haters out there, women were leading God's people in the Old Testament. Now, Deborah and following, that's a whole different discussion, okay? But what we find here is that Samson is a man after marked by God, and there were good judges, godly judges, and okay judges, and terrible judges. Samson falls in the mix of just an okay kind of judge. He was inconsistent, and you're going to find that he had possessed incredible physical strength when he was faithful to God, and when he was unfaithful, he lost his strength. He became a weakling. And so he possessed this superhuman kind of strength when he was close to God, but he had no self-control. He had no self-control, and that became the actual demise of him. Samson was blinded by lust and anger and arrogance, and his lust led him right to Delilah. Delilah was not his wife. Delilah was his favorite prostitute. And so there's an exchange of money for something, sex. And can I just tell you, any relationship that starts with sex is not a good foundation to build upon. That's not the foundation that God wants for your relationship. There needs to be that heart connection there. Then there needs that moment where we say, we're going to connect each other through a covenant called marriage. And then you get that great, wonderful release of love called sex. Okay, that's my soapbox. Delilah is a Philistine. Philistines are the enemy of God. And Samson shouldn't be with her anyway. And Samson's lust led him right to the lap of his enemy. See what I did there? Judges chapter 16, verse 5. The rulers of the Philistines, Judges 16, verse 5, the rulers of the Philistines went to her, Delilah, and said, "See, if you can lure him into showing you the secret of his great strength and how we can overpower him. You get him to lose his strength, we'll get a bunch of soldiers in the room, we'll overpower him, tie him up and subdue him, and then each one of those leaders will give you 1,100 shekels of silver." Just a note here, Delilah was in it for the money, not for the love. This was just another job. He was just another client, but Samson fell head over heels for her. He was in love. She was not. She was in love with money. And Delilah tries everything she can to get Samson to release to him, her rather, the truth of his strength. And he wouldn't do it because he's a trickster. He's a trickster. Like you see all through the book of Judges 14, 15, and 16, the stories of Samson. He's a trickster. He's really a jerk, honestly. He just tries to trick people because he's arrogant in it. And he tries to trick her. He's like, "Well, tie me up with fresh ropes, and I can't break fresh ropes. Tie me up with new string, I can't break string." One thing after another. But every time, "Samson, the soldiers are here. They're going to take you away." He'd break the ropes. It didn't matter. And then finally, he gets to the heart of it, tells the truth, okay? The relationship's built on deceit, deception, lust, arrogancy. And finally, the truth comes out. Look here in verse 17. "So he told her everything. No razor has ever been used on my head," he said, "because I have I have been a Nazirite. Nazirites had certain rules, restrictions, because they've been set apart by God. One of them was you don't cut the hair. Nazirite dedicated to God from my mother's womb. And if my head were shaved, my strength would leave me, and I would become as weak as another man. So all of a sudden now, Delilah opens up her own barbershop, beauty shop, and she starts getting in on cutting hair. Verse 20, look what happens. Then she called Samson after she cut his hair. The Philistines are upon you. He woke up from that sleep and thought, well, I'll just go out and before and shake myself free, but he did not. Why? Because it's a sad statement. The Lord had left him. And so that superhuman strength was gone. He had the strength of just a normal man. And then you find out in the preceding verses that he had his eyes gouged out by the enemy. Then he was in prison. Then he was forced to tread grain like an ox. And then he was brought out from that imprisonment for certain times where people could, like, you know, watch him dance and do acts of strength at festivals. And one festival, he's out there amongst the enemies, and he's finally resting against some pillars of a temple, and he decides with one last bit of strength to say, God, may I avenge the enemy, and he presses over the pillars of the temple, and that roof collapses on him, killing him, and about 3,000 of God's enemies, the Philistines. End of story of Samson. That's a toxic relationship, just so you are aware. That relationship should have had a burned bridge, should have never started to begin with. God never wanted that relationship to start, but Samson did anyway. Samson's name means man of the sun, which means he is the strongest or brightest thing in the world. Delilah's name means feeble, weak. And so just a play on words tells us the moral of the simple story, which is when the relationship is toxic, even the strongest person can be brought down by the weakest. So if you sit here and you say, but I'm the strong one in the relationship, it doesn't matter. Bad company does what? It corrupts good behavior. Nothing affects your character more than the company that you keep. Show me your friends, I'll show you your future. Never underestimate the influence of people that you have allowed into your life. And let me just talk about some of these people. The corruptible character. Let me just define some stereotypes of some toxic people quickly. They're the demanding. That's the bossy, the pushy, controlling, intimidating. Usually they control the conversation. They're overly opinionated. They want to force their opinion on you. They're disapproving. Nothing you do will ever please them. Your best is never enough for them. They're highly negative, judgmental, usually hard to be around. The deafening. They won't be quiet. They'll like speak you into surrender. You can never get a word in edgewise. Usually selfish, very argumentative. The destructive, like their anger is a volcanic anger. It just erupts out of them. Their abuse just affects them and affects you like a ripple, harmful to others. You might live in fear of them. Usually they will harm you too because they're harming themselves. The discontented, these are the folks that are never satisfied in life, never have enough money, never have a good job. They whine a lot. They're oftentimes offended. They have pity parties. They're usually chronic complainers. And then the demeaning. They're rude, they're insulting, they're quick to deflate your joy, they want to override your accomplishments, they're very disrespectful. Listen, you might have people in your life that have all six of those. Run. Some of you are like, I don't have anybody in my relationships like that. You're that person then. But I think every single one of us possess some of that, but some of us really ooze some of that stuff to the point where it is ruining our lives, ruining our family. So what do? When the relationship gets toxic. Last week, it was this simple diagram that I placed on the screen before us. You can run through this to determine the plan. This has to be discussed mutually with the person whom you are having a problem with. The question is, what's the real problem? What is the real problem? What's the real problem that is causing this? And then how has this problem caused us pain? Not just you pain, this is how has this problem caused the relationship pain? And then can this problem be resolved? And last week was, if there's a mutualness to yes, then you can build some bridges and set some boundaries. If the answer to both of you is no or one is no, you have to then think, what's the plan? What's the strategy ahead? Build a bridge, build some boundaries, burn some bridges. Today, if the answer is both no, you have to work on burn bridges or set boundaries. That's life, right? And so here's the big question. When should I burn the bridge? Pastor, when do I need to cut this off, kill this off in my life? I can't answer that for you. Good night, everybody. See you later. right? No, that's totally unfair of me to do. But what I can say is this. You're going to have to do the hard work, which is the heart work. Remember the heart work last week in any relationship? Doesn't matter if it's good, bad, or ugly. The heart work is I'm going to pray for this person, pray for myself, and then I'm going to forgive. I am going to release them. I'm not going to hold them to whatever tragedy or bad thing they have done. I'm just going to release this, and I'm going to pray over it. That doesn't matter if you burn the bridge, rebuild the bridge, build a bridge, or build some boundaries. The hard work. Can I just tell you, though, some of you are going to walk out of here, and immediately in your head, you're thinking, right now, one of those six was on my list, and I'm going to walk out here, I'm going to burn some bridges, and you're going to use me as your excuse to do it. And you're going to deceive that person. You're going to say, my pastor said I need to kill off this relationship. I never said that. I'm asking you to do the very hard work of praying to God. This and forgiving, that this is not a 24-hour kind of decision, friends. This could be 40 days in the wilderness. Of you trying to work this out with God and wrestling with God. What do I do here next? Don't use me as the incendiary device to blow this thing up. You pray over this. But question number one needs to be, is this relationship keeping me from consistently living for God? That's a good question to ask if you need to burn the relationship down. In the Old Testament book of Deuteronomy, God says, if there's anything that my children are being held back in their relationship in meeting with me, if there's anything or anyone that is stopping my people from meeting with me, that relationship needs to be killed off. And you know how God says kill off there? He doesn't mean like slice it off. He says actually kill that person. That is how powerful and important God looks at our relationships. He says, listen, better have a relationship with me in heaven and have some burned bridges down here on earth, right? Rather than have some good relationships on earth and some burned, literally, relationships in hell with God. Pretty simple stuff. So Jesus corrects it like this. He cleans it up in very beautiful language that we can understand a little better. Luke chapter 9, as he talks about the loyalty level that Christians should have in commitment. He says, whoever wants to be my disciple must do what? Deny themselves and take up their cross. How often? Daily. Every day you say, I'm dying today, God, and I want to live for you. It's a constant commitment. Friends, it's not casual stuff here. It's not casual stuff. He's not asking for your leftovers. He wants your very beginnings. He wants everything that you are. And so Jesus is really saying anything, anyone that's keeping you from living consistently, daily on mission for me, if they are getting in way of that, you cut them out. Rather to be in heaven than in hell. I mean, come on, let's just get to the nitty-gritty of it. And so Jesus gave this very strict teaching that you and I don't know what to do with because we've misinterpreted it so often out of Matthew 10. Do not think that I have come to bring peace to the earth. Wait a minute, I did, didn't you? Jesus is so peaceful. Was he, though, honestly? I have come to bring peace. I've not come to bring peace, but what? Let's say a sword. For I have come to set a man against a father and a daughter against her mother and a daughter-in-law against her mother. That makes sense. And a person's enemies will be those. A person's enemies will be those of his own household. And you're saying, wait a minute here. I thought Jesus says he is the Prince of Peace. I know enough Bible to recognize that Jesus is the Prince of Peace. But here it sounds like he's the King of Chaos or the Savior of the sword. Can I tell you why Jesus says, I am the Prince of Peace? He is the Prince of Peace because he has brought peace between you and God. That's why he came. His atoning death, his atoning sacrifice made a way when you didn't have a way, forgave you when you couldn't be forgiven. His perfection was given up so that people like you and me who are imperfect can come and be in the righteousness, the holiness of God and have a relationship with God forever. He is the Prince of Peace, but he is the King. He is the King of conflict, isn't he? Spouse who gave herself to the Lord, but the other spouse hasn't. Child who gave themselves to the Lord, but their parents haven't. Sometimes he feels like the sword figuratively, doesn't he? Because he's cutting off, because you no longer serve the same morals. You no longer serve the same schedule. You no longer serve the same ideas of what ethics are, where you should invest your money. You're having fights over where you should invest your money now. They just take from you at the church. No, no, no. We're investing in the kingdom of God there. You're a fool. This figurative sword that Jesus brings, the cost of discipleship that's so high. He says, look, this is what commitment looks like. It could look like the sword to family and friends sometimes. You know, I was in India a few years ago, and I witnessed this beautiful baptismal service. It was just like the sun was setting, and there's like a handful of people that came forward to give their life to Jesus Christ, and there was one young teenage girl that had two gigantic old Samsonite suitcases in her hand. She drops them off right there at her feet, and she starts to get in the water, and I have to ask our missionary, TV Paul, I said, what in the world's going on here? And he just tells me, he says, listen, in India, when you give your life over to Jesus Christ, there ain't no going back. And so he explains to me that mom and dad told her specifically that if you get baptized and you become a believer in Jesus Christ, you are not welcome in our house. So every effect that she owned was in those two suitcases. And she knew that as she entered the water, she'd become an orphan on earth, but a daughter of God in heaven. You want to talk about the sword? You want to talk about the sword? Here's the second question. Is this relationship causing irreparable harm to my body, soul, or spirit? Irreparable harm, meaning it's irreversible harm. I'm not talking like I've been slapped before. Like there is a pattern of abuse here. It's bringing irreparable harm to me. You're made in the image of God. Let's not forget that. That has nothing to do with the physical looks. That has everything to do with the triune thing of man. Just as God is God the Father, God the Son, God the Spirit. That's a trinity of God. Can't explain that away. I can't really understand that. God has designed me and you to have a triune system as well. I am body, soul, spirit, so are you. The body's that physical thing. Don't get too attached to it. Don't get too worried about it. It's gone, not sticking with us. We get a new body in heaven. I thought I'd get a lot more amens out of that. Yeah. Okay, so, and then there is what I call the soul. The Apostle Paul sums up and says there's a soul that's the personality. We're going to be known and recognized. How will we know each other in heaven when we have a different body? The soul, the personality that God gives to us. And then there's the spirit. The spirit. The believer knows that we no longer carry our same spirit because our spirit is corrupted and dead, right? So we go to the baptistry and we kill that spirit off and are made with what? The Spirit of God. To have things that go beyond us, to have powers that go beyond us, to have the power to forgive, the power to find healing, even in some of these terrible, terrible situations that you might find yourself in. So here is the thing. If your body is being abused consistently on a pattern of behavior, that there is irreversible harm, that you can't stop it, and that person is constantly in your life, and it is sexual abuse, physical abuse, whatever it is, you need to consider burning the bridge. You need healing. They need help. Your soul. If your soul is under attack, emotional abuse, verbal abuse, manipulation, continual, like irreversible. You're not a normal person anymore because you can't function the way that you used to function because this person is like over top of you constantly. Your soul is being ruined. Your personality is being destroyed. You need to consider burning that bridge. They need help. You need healing. Your spirit, which some of you, it's God's spirit within you, needs protected. It's holding you back from living for the King of Kings, the Lord of Lords. If that person is keeping you away from the things of faith, from living on mission, from the people who are of faith, you need to consider burning the bridge. You need healing. They need saving. Listen, just because somebody wants to live their life with drama doesn't mean that you have to be the audience to it, nor does it mean you have to be the unwilling player in it. Okay, what if you're in the gray area? You can't figure this out. You need to pray. Pray for clarity, pray for wisdom, pray for discernment, and please do not run to friends that are going to give you the answer that you want to hear. Like men, if you're struggling with your wife right now, don't go to the women hater club. No sense in that. You know what you're going to get. You need to go find a respected pastor, an objective faith friend. And if you're going to burn this bridge, you need to consider some things. You're going to go through some grief. You're going to go through the five stages of grief. You're going to find denial. You're like, oh man, should I have done that? Anger, bargaining. Maybe I should go back. Maybe I should go back to this abuseful situation. You're going to want that. Depression. You're going to feel depressed about it, and you're going to isolate yourself. And acceptance. So let me say this: if you're considering burning the bridge, before you burn the bridge, you need to define it with that person, what's about ready to take place. If God lays on your heart, the bridge needs to be burned, you need to go to that person and say, listen, God is telling me. And here's this thing that's happened in our life. I need to find, the bridge is going to be burned, and then you need to flee from it. Too many people go back to it. They need to flee from it, and then you need to find some faith-filled friends. And then, this is the step we don't take. We need to find a biblical therapist. Sometimes it can require counseling, but here's what I've discovered. When we start messing with the triune side of man, body, soul, and spirit, it rewires us, it messes us up. It messes our mind up. And here's what I don't want to happen. I don't want a past relationship that was ruined and rotten and terrible and disgusting to ruin this next relationship that God has planned for you. And so you need some therapy to work some things out and to get back to a healthy place of mind and not look at every relationship or every man or every woman as the bad person. You get what I'm saying? We just have to recognize that God has given us some doctors, and it goes beyond flesh and blood. Sometimes it goes to the mind, and we need to take advantage of good Christian therapists. So when to burn the bridge, you have to ask God, do the heart work, which is the hard work. Here's the second part. When should I build some boundaries, though? When should I build some boundaries? When do I need to build a drawbridge? You know what a drawbridge is? Are you too young to know what a drawbridge is, right? So in front of the castle, a drawbridge goes down. During times of peace, people can go in and they can find refuge behind the walls of the castle. And then during times of war, what happens? The drawbridge is pulled up so the enemy cannot invade. They can find some kind of security. And may I just say, more commonly than not, you will not be building burning bridges. You will be building drawbridges in your relationships. And just so you're aware of, there are probably two bonds that I can think of that you'll never be able to burn down. You'll have to build some drawbridges in them. Are you ready? Anybody that you're connected with blood and anybody that you share a baby with. Blood and babies. You're forever connected. So you can't burn that bridge, all right? So you have to put in a drawbridge, establish a bridge. It may not get down very often. It may not open up very often. You have to determine that time. But listen, you have to keep your heart open to that, that maybe in 20 years they give their life to Christ and everything changes. Listen, guys, if Bobby Knight can get back into Assembly Hall yesterday, anything can happen. Yeah. So don't rule this stuff out. So here are a couple of questions that I think you need to ask before you start thinking, should boundaries be built? Number one is this toxic person causing self-harm? Are they hurting themselves? Or like, are they just making a mess of their life continually? Maybe it's substance abuse, drug abuse, drunkenness, abuse of prescription pills, addiction to pornography or gambling or addiction to sex, habitual lying, habitual financial troubles, mental instability. It sounds like I am reading off the side effects of the latest prescription drug right now. But some of you guys know my backstory. Some of you know my family story. My dad's brother was in and out of prison, ultimately murdered because of the lifestyle that he chose to live. He was a drug user, and there were times when he could find sobriety when he wanted it. It was just a strange situation. But we always knew when he was using, because when he was using, our homes would be broken into. And any family member knows, if you have a child who is an addict, you know they're going to steal from you. They steal from the people that's an easy and easy steal. So he was caught up in all that kind of stuff. And there were times when we were just flat out fearful for our lives. But you know, there were times when he'd find sobriety, and you'd get to look into his eyes and stare into his heart, and you'd say, he is the most godly, nicest person you'd ever meet. And then you'd go back, and he would turn like the gates of hell just opened up. And my parents responsibly set drawbridges into place. And they defended the castle of our lives and their heart. Because he was causing self-harm and you couldn't figure out who he was. And so they had predetermined times when they would let my Uncle Joey through. How about you? Have you set that drawbridge up in your relationship to someone who is toxic and self-destructive? Here's the second question. Are you suffering because of the consequences of that self-destructive person? Are you feeling the ripples of it? Like that drug use is negatively affecting you and your kids. That drinking. Now, I didn't say drunkenness, just the drinking. Just that buzzness, the drinking, or the desire to always have a drink is not producing anything good in the relationship. The lying is destroying the trust. The mental instability is tearing apart the family. The addiction is crushing and squeezing the life out of the relationship. Listen, the boundaries might be serious, and sometimes the boundaries might be simple. Let me explain. I'm addicted to coffee. Can you tell? I guess so. I'm addicted to coffee, but it's not hurting or killing my relationship yet. So no boundaries are in place. But you know what I'm addicted to? I'm addicted to playing the guitar. And so my wife knows. She figured this out 18 years ago. First year of marriage, she realized, if I'm playing the guitar, I'm not hearing anything, even though my head is doing this. Okay? So she says, Matt, the boundary is anytime I talk to you, you put down the guitar. That's a simple boundary right there. Communication boundary. How about you men that just, you spend on your hobby? Maybe it's car parts that you like to buy because you're always rebuilding something, redoing something, but yet you've never looked at the budget and now there is financial turmoil in the relationship because you're always in the red because of your overspending. You just need some boundaries in the budget. That's all. And you need to stick with them. Or ladies' night out. Nothing wrong with having good friends, but every Friday your husband knows he's going to get the kids in his lap and you're going to go out with them and he's not going to go out with you. Whose relationship are you building up? And he just sits back and, okay, well, I'll let you do that. That's fine. I get that. But boy, maybe there needs to be some schedule boundaries. Hey, I'll have some date nights with you too, honey. This marriage is important to me also. Simple boundaries. Or you might have to have some serious boundaries, some family members like my Uncle Joe. Or maybe you have a self-destructive ex-spouse. What do you do then? You just have to have some serious boundaries. I don't know what those look like. You got to pray. You got to determine. You got to ask God for discernment. That's not up to me. That's up to you and God. And maybe you have an ex-boyfriend, ex-girlfriend that just constantly stays around even though you're married. Guess what? That's an old fling that hasn't been flung far enough. And you need to release that person. You want to know why? They're going to come back to haunt your marriage one day. And you don't, I don't have any feelings for him, honey. No, one day you might again. Get that person gone. No reuse to have that person around. So what do you do then? What do you do then with boundaries and then establish and looking at someone and say, now I've established this boundary. How do you go about that? Well, you have to use this status and standing and strategy. What's their standing? Hey, Dad, you're super destructive. You're overly controlling. But my standing with you is I'm your son and you're still my dad. Nothing will change that. I'm your son and you're my dad. And here's the status of our relationship. It's broken, it's hurt, it's ruined, and you can state how it's ruined. And then here's the strategy going forward, Dad. From here on up, you can have contact with me, but you cannot be around my kids and you cannot be around my wife. I will help you through this, but they will not. This is not her decision or their decision. This is my decision. I've been praying over this. Here's the boundaries that we're setting into place. And until you get this problem fixed in your life, you're not going to continue to drag my wife, my family through the mud that you've made. That's simple, right? Standing, status, strategy. Here's who you are. Here's the nature of the relationship. Here's how we're going to move forward. Now, after you set the boundaries, you got to recognize you got to guard your heart. Toxic people can easily poison the water hole of your life. And you know what the water hole of your life is? God says it's our heart. It's our heart. Listen, look at Proverbs. Keep your heart with all vigilance. Keep your heart with all vigilance. Stand strong. Be fierce about it. For from it, what happens? From it flow the springs of life. Here's another version of it. Guard your heart above all else, for it determines the course of your life. Set some property lines up to your life. Establish some property lines. Listen, as neighbors, we have property lines, right? Some property lines are hard to define because you're just using your lawnmowers to define your property line. And when you want a couple more square foot, you just kind of push your mower over a little bit, right? But they're easy to find, and your neighbor doesn't care because you guys have a good relationship. There's some difficult, though, relationships that property lines are a little harder because you have trees now. You don't want to see your neighbor. And you need now a dividing point. Some people put up a fence, and they're like, I don't want my neighbor even to come over. Some put the fence with the dog, and you're like, don't ever look over my fence ever again. But there's property lines to life. Why not be property lines to your heart here? Because that's the guarding of the heart. So let's just put it in this example. Maybe your neighbor comes to you, and he says, I've got a plumbing problem at my house. Can you help me? You gladly grab your tools. You run over there, and you see that it's an absolute mess. Nothing has been cleaned up. And so you immediately go to the hard work of cleaning it up using your own tools, your own rags, everything else. And the whole time, he's sitting there watching the basketball game in his recliner. And you go, well, you know, no big deal. I'll just keep on going through. And you discover that this is going to need some costly repairs. And so you're going, hey, I'm going to run to the hardware store. It's going to need some repairs, and I got to buy some things. And you're hoping he's going to shell out some cash, but he doesn't ever offer. And you go, and you come back from the hardware store, and you've spent a lot of money on it. And then you get into the fixing it of the problem, and you realize this is a bigger job than you even know how to handle. You're creating all sorts of mess, all sorts of noise. And he's finally now complaining at you that you're too noisy. You made too big of a mess. You're too much of a problem in his life. Get out of the house. And you say, don't you want this fixed? He says, I'll fix it later. What do you do? Here's what you do. Hey, I can help my neighbor with his plumbing problem, but ultimately it's their problem. Why? Because it's on his property line. It's on his property. I'm out of there. Okay, you don't want my help? I'm gone. If they don't want it fixed, I can't force them. So, you have to establish the property line to your heart. And I know how some of you think, you're like, wait a minute, didn't Jesus tell us to turn the other cheek? Didn't he tell us to go the extra mile? Yep, he did. And you have to pray for clarity about when turning the other cheek turns to abuse, and when running the extra mile turns to enabling. Because that toxic person will continue to take and continue to take and continue to destroy. They're not worried about you. Hey, don't just share my burden. Share all of my burden. And if you don't have some property lines to your heart, you're going to take on everything they keep throwing on. And you're going to forget they have some personal responsibility in the relationship. Did you catch that? They have some personal responsibility within the relationship. Galatians chapter 6, verse 2, verse 5 couldn't be more clear about it. Carry each other's burdens, and in this you will fulfill the law of Christ. If anyone thinks they are something when they are not, they've deceived themselves. Each one should test their own actions. Then they can take pride in themselves alone without comparing themselves to someone else. Verse 5, for each one should carry their own loads. And there's a play on the words. I think Paul wrote the book of Galatians, and Paul says, we should carry each other's burdens. That means a heavy load, a boulder. That means something of bulk, something too heavy for the individual to carry. It's going to take a community. It's going to take a family. It's going to take friends. It's going to take a church to help carry that load. And certainly all of us go through a load at some time where it's so big that we're going to need the help of everyone to help carry it. And then he moves on and said, but for each one should carry their own load. And there's a different word that's used there. It's the word for satchel or lunch pail or purse, something that is individually held not too much of a burden, but still they have to hold on to it. They have some level of responsibility. And really what's being said here is there are things that the whole community is going to need to join in to help that person out with. And but don't forget, they're going to have to carry their own load. They have a level of responsibility. Friends, here's the truth of us, especially of Christians. Sometimes we get into trouble when we carry the wrong burdens of others in the relationship. Sometimes we just get into trouble when we try to carry all of the burden in the relationship. The boulder, you can help with. The rocks, that is on them. Let's just apply this for a moment to an addict, maybe that's in your life, an addict. They can't break their addiction, and you try to tell them about their addiction. They've never confessed their addiction, and so they're constantly making a mess in life, and it's rippling into you, and so you truly have a desire to help, and you start cleaning up their mess. You start bailing them out of jail. You start dragging them to rehab when they don't want to go. Friend, you know what you're doing? You are only cleaning the cobwebs. You are not killing the spider. The spider lives on to continue to make more cobwebs in the house. You haven't helped anybody. You've just cleaned up a mess. And friends, there's some time period where you keep turning the other cheek, walking the extra mile, and giving of your cloak, but at some point there's abuse and enabling. All right, since I don't know how to end this, here comes a crash landing. How do you move forward in a toxic relationship? What's your next step? That's my question. How do you move forward in your toxic relationship? What's your next step? Burn a bridge, build a drawbridge, set some boundaries. My guess is today you don't know. And I can't tell you because every single relationship is different. Every scenario is different. But here's where I know where to start. Prayer.